Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Zarin.
Elizabeth.
Listen.
Yeah.
You know it's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Do you like German chocolate cakes?
Yeah, sure.
Right? Do you know the secret of German chocolate cakes? Not like how to bake a good one, but what the secret is?
I'm scared.
It's not German.
Okay.
Yeah, so turns out German chocolate cake was actually named after an American named Samuel German.
No.
Yes. So in 1957, there was this recipe called German's chocolate cake, and it appeared in the Dallas Morning News as the recipe of the day, submitted by Mrs. George Clay. So we don't even know her real name because she went by her husband's name because it's 1957.
Right.
So this homemaker from Dallas, she submits this recipe, and it was from an 1853 recipe of an American baker, Samuel German, who had made this cake for, you know, Baker's Chocolate Company, so owned by General Foods. Well, they published this recipe, and within, like, it becomes a sensation across the country. Sales of chocolate, Baker's Chocolate, went up by 73%. And from that point on, we've had German chocolate cake. And people then just dropped the Germans because it didn't sound as much fun as German chocolate cake. And fools like me thought it was German. I'm over there asking Germans, when you guys go for a good German chocolate cake? And they look at me like I'm an idiot, which they often do, but whatever.
It's got the coconut, right?
No, it's got the shavings and all that.
Yeah, I think it's got coconut.
Yeah, coconut and shavings on the...
That's not very German.
No, that was the thing. That's why I'm like, when did you guys get all cocoa for coconuts?
I had no idea. You know what? That's ridiculous.
Okay, ridiculous.
Well done. Do you know what else is ridiculous?
No, I do not. That's what I'm here for.
Conning Al Capone.
What?
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous.
I know you heard that.
Zarin, you like to quote Biggie's crack commandments.
I do. Yeah. I do. It's good philosophy.
Let's clarify that we're talking about the late rap superstar Notorious B.I.G. and his tune, 10 Crack Commandments.
Yes, and not the wrestler Big E?
Like, no.
What are we...
let me recount them for you.
Please.
So, rule numero uno, never let no one know how much dough you hold.
Yes.
So that's important. Don't let anyone know how much money you have on you. Number two, never let them know your next move.
Yes.
Don't you know bad boys move in silence and violence?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's self-explanatory.
Dude, real G's move in silence like lasagna.
Exactly. Number three, never trust nobody.
Yes.
Now, we're going to ignore the double negative.
Why?
So that makes it you can trust everybody. Never trust nobody. Number four, never get high on your own supply.
So important.
That's incredible advice for all sorts of things.
Even if your supply is just your own ego.
Exactly. Number five, Never sell no crack where you rest at.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I abide by that. And number six.
Don't bring your business home.
That goddamn credit, debit.
Debit, yes.
Which, don't sell your wares on credit.
Yes. Don't front for nobody.
Yeah. Seven. Keep your family and business completely separated.
Mm-hmm.
That's always good.
I think Ben Franklin would agree with all of these.
Oh, yeah. Number eight, never keep no weight on you.
Yes, never. So, someone else holds it for you.
Again, yeah. You know, so don't have the drugs on your person.
This is the way to stay free.
Number nine, if you ain't getting bagged, stay the from police.
Oh, yes.
So don't cooperate with law enforcement. Number 10.
I love your translations.
A strong word called consignment.
Mm.
So, you know, meaning it's only for seasoned drug dealers to use a system whereby the drugs are shipped to a dealer who pays only for what is sold and who may return what is unsold.
Yes.
Or it's an arrangement in which goods are left in the possession of an authorized third party to sell.
Yes. Basically, you would only front to somebody who you really trust. So like Pablo Escobar can do consignment, but you shouldn't as a local dealer.
Right. And I'm just going to admit, I have no idea what all that means. So, you know,
you're very convinced.
You know who had crime commandments long before Biggie Smalls?
Jesus.
Victor Lustig.
Oh, I was close.
Yeah. Noah.
Moses.
Nicodemus.
He did. He really did.
Nicodemus Adam. Okay, so Victor Lustig.
Yes.
He created the Ten Commandments for con men.
Oh, right.
Number one.
Go.
Be a patient listener.
Yes.
It is this, not fast talking, that gets a con man his coups.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number two, never look bored.
Yes.
That's good advice. Three, wait for the other person to reveal any political opinions and then agree with them.
Yes.
Okay. Number
never express those.
Yeah. Number first. Four, let the other person reveal religious views, then have the same ones.
Once again, emulate your person you're talking with.
Right. Next one, hint at sex talk, but don't follow it up unless the other person shows a strong interest.
Yes.
That's always good advice.
All smart. These are just good for polite conversation.
Exactly. Never discuss illness unless some special concern is shown. Again, going with, like, this is how to, you know, be in public. Never pry into a person's personal circumstances. They'll tell you all eventually.
Yeah.
Again.
Solid.
Never boast. Just let your importance be quietly obvious.
I try to live by these. These are solid.
Never be untidy. And lastly, never get drunk.
Damn, I was good for up till then.
I got all 10. Woo! So who is this professor of cons?
Who is this professor of cons, Elizabeth?
Count Victor Lustig.
Wouldn't it be Lustig?
Lustig, sure.
I just like saying
it. I'm just Americanizing it. You know, here's the thing. I say things wrong all the time. I mispronounce. I do bad accents. I'm not trying to. Neither one of us are trying to do an effective accent.
No, but sometimes I do put the, like, when I'm going to say a word, I'll put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time, too. So what I'm trying to say is that I don't care if I say things wrong.
Ooh, wow.
And nor
draw
should any,
that line
nor
in
should
the
anyone
sand.
Else. Anyway, Lustig, Lustig.
Yes.
What have you?
Vic.
He wasn't a real count.
No.
And as many, like, we have all these con artistes that we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
He liked to be, you know, fake being a member of aristocracy, but also he had this air about him that people just called him that.
Oh.
In his long career of criming, he never held a gun.
I like it.
I know. I really like that. My kind
of guy.
You
shouldn't have to force it.
It's my kind of guy.
Don't force the issue.
Exactly. His hobby? Collecting butterflies and pinning them in shadow boxes.
I like it, you know.
Pin and mount me like a butterfly, as the despicable Morrissey would sing. So many double entendres.
So
he was always kind to the ladies.
Uh-huh.
Smooth talker. He was born in Hostinay, Bohemia.
If you say
1890.
So.
Yeah, Bohemia, land of my grandpa's people, and con artists. He used to tell people that his dad was the mayor of his hometown.
Yeah,
It's not true. He later admitted that his parents were, quote, the poorest peasant people.
Okay.
Which is, you know, that's good.
Nothing wrong with that.
But he said he had to turn to crime just to survive. Times were so tough. In 2015, a historian from Hostinay started looking for biographical information about his town's famous native son.
Okay. Most prominent residents and so forth.
Yeah.
The who's who.
The problem is that the Nazis had burned a lot of records. And so he was looking through what was left. And it looked like there were records remaining that aligned with the time that he was in town. There's absolutely no mention of him in anything. School rolls, electoral records, anything.
Hmm.
So whether he was telling the truth or not, up in the air.
Maybe he was a homeschooled aristocrat.
It could be. But, you know, here's what I say.
Yes.
Who knows, who cares?
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
You said it.
I sort of care, but, like, I don't. Anyway, As a kid, he started out panhandling, and that led to pickpocketing, and that led to burglary, which led to street hustling.
It's a nice little step.
Yeah,
one,
exactly.
Two, three.
He mastered card tricks. According to True Detective magazine, quote, palming, slipping cards from the deck, dealing from the bottom. And then by the time he reached adulthood, he could make a deck of cards, quote, do everything but talk. So kind of like you. By the time he was 19, he made his way to Paris.
All right.
And that's where he got into gambling.
Yes.
He learned a bunch of languages when he was there. He wound up speaking six languages.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I know, right?
I've always wanted to speak six languages.
I can barely speak this one.
I'm trying to work my way into two.
Okay, what two? English and what?
Well, my Spanish is basically, you know, California work Spanish.
Right,
so,
right.
I can, but also my vocabulary is good because I went to school, so I can understand far more. It's much like French. I can read it because of my vocabulary, but I can't really speak it because my grammar is still, like, on the mind, terrible. Anyway, so likewise, I guess that's almost two languages would be if you combine my Spanish and my French.
So anyway, this dude's six languages.
Oh, so amazing.
He learned how to read people and how to manipulate situations.
Okay.
He also played competitive level chess.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He's a brain.
He picked up a humdinger of a scar on his face thanks to a dust-up with a love rival.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like in a chess match. Someone like buried a rook in his face or something.
Well, let's say that happened. Yeah, he just got it like, you know, he was fighting over some
broad.
Okay,
so she cut him.
Yeah, so he got his first real crime gig on transatlantic voyages.
Oh, nice.
And he especially...
We're talking steamship, right?
Yeah, he especially liked to target the nouveau riche.
Mm.
So he'd hop on a liner in one of like the Atlantic ports in France and then ship off to New York City. He'd mentioned to the swells... that he who was like this musical producer looking for investors for his Broadway production.
Of course, yes.
There's no production, of course, yeah. So things stopped for him in World War I because transatlantic liners, you know, were, you know, couldn't make it
across.
They're
getting sunk.
A little problem. And he needed to find a new place to con. And what better choice than these United States of America?
Oh, so rich, so ready to be picked.
So this was a booming time in the U.S. for cons. It's the age of Charles Ponzi.
Oh, so yeah, this is, like we said, basically just after World War One. So we're going into the roaring 20s.
Uh-huh.
Big time for crime.
Exactly. And, you know, we've had a number of criminals on this podcast who cast about the States at this time.
Mm-hmm.
People were suckers for unidentifiable European accents.
Oh, we still are.
Oh, I know. So there were like all these smooth, nonviolent, charming scoundrels
The Count
running
of this,
about.
The Duke of that.
Yeah. I'm going to, again, quote True Detective magazine.
Cool. Lay it on me.
That Lustig was a man who, quote, society took by one hand and the underworld by the other, a flesh and blood Jekyll and Hyde.
Ooh, I like
that.
Yeah,
because he was messing with, like, all the rich folks and with, like, the mob in the underworld.
It's also kind of fun to picture him as a kid, and those are his parents, and he's, like, swinging from their hands as they're walking down the sidewalk.
Exactly. 1919, he married a woman named Roberta.
Okay.
And she was from Kansas.
Oh, Bobby
pretty,
from Kansas.
Pretty old Kansan. This was one of the many loves in his life.
Mm.
In 1925, he then heads back to Paris. He's like, Bertie, it's been great. Hang tight. She's, you know, he's gone.
I got to go check on Hemingway.
Yeah. So he's like, I got to go to Paris. And it was there, while he's there, he learns that there are problems with maintaining the Eiffel Tower.
Mm.
And the thing fallen apart. It really desperately needed a paint job.
They needed a new ratchet on there.
They needed
those
ratchets.
Rivets.
I mean, that's the problem. Rachets is what they call them over there.
French rachet.
So there was all this talk that they were just going to tear it down.
The Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, it was so busted up.
Like, wasn't it put up in like 1839?
Yeah, but it was only supposed to be sort of temporary for this
World Expo. Right?
Yeah.
World Expo.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, Victor's there. Light bulb goes off in his head, in this criminal brain of his. He had someone print up stationery for him that had the official French government seal on it.
Ooh, nice.
And he used that stationery to write to some scrap metal dealers.
Okay.
And he said, hey, guys. I'm a government official. Look
I'm
at me.
I'm France.
Can I meet with you at the Hotel de Crillon?
Oh,
again,
yes.
I don't do accents.
Why not? It was good, though.
A super swanky hotel.
All right.
Please be discreet, he says. This is confidential. Wink, wink. So at the hotel, he introduces himself as the deputy director general of the Ministry of Posts and Telegraphs.
I believe it.
That sounds right. So he tells the men this sorrowful tale. About how it was just costing way too much to maintain the Tour Eiffel.
Oh, of course.
Quote, because of engineering faults, costly repairs, and political problems I cannot discuss, the tearing down of the Eiffel Tower has become mandatory.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, do you know how much and how hard it is to paint this thing?
And it's such a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
no one ever liked it.
As such, the French government looking to sell it for scrap.
That's what he tells them. We want to scrap this beauty.
Yeah. It just doesn't fit in with the rest of the city architecturally.
We have new plans for the park.
However,
yes,
this is going to upset a lot of people that we want to scrap this thing. They'll take their anger to the streets, as is their wont. So that's why you need to be so secret about this. That's why you can't tell anyone about this meeting.
No one.
Tell no one about this. So Victor tells the group that he's responsible for selecting the dealer who will receive ownership of the structure. So it's just like kind of an audition. This is 7,000 tons of metal.
Yes.
This is
a big job.
Big payday. He even rented limos and like took the dealers on tours of the tower.
Wow.
Right? I mean, that's just gutsy.
That's the show.
So as he tells this tale, he tried to figure out who the most gullible of this group is. He's like looking at him like, that guy is a mouth breather. I don't know about him. So he sees this one guy, André Poisson. He's a social climber. Like he's new in Paris and he wants to build up his business and he's just like glad handing everyone. So that's who Victor sets up a meeting with.
André Fish.
André Fish. And it was there, like at this next meeting, he's like, André, I'm crooked. I am fully corrupt.
Are you?
Are you into that? Because I'm into that. I'll take a bribe in exchange for getting you the contract.
Hmm.
But, you know, you got to juice me. So André hands over about 70,000 francs and is just pleased as punch with his deal. He's like, hey, the contract's mine. Victor is like, bye. He goes to Austria. He's like, I'm out of here. So he's in the wind.
Yes.
He got away with the scam. André, too ashamed to admit, like, how gullible he was. And so Victor's watching, like, is there any news of this?
Any headlines? Yeah.
Nothing. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to do it again.
I'm going back for
seconds. He goes back to Paris. So he set up everything as he had before, the stationery, the hotel. And this time he takes another, like, selected group of scrap dealers.
More scrap dealers? How many scrap dealers are in Paris?
This place is lousy with scrap dealers. Every street corner. Like one of them, oh, he gets a little uneasy in this meeting. He's like, this just doesn't add up. Like, why aren't we meeting in government offices?
My spidey sense, it's a tingling.
Yeah. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to the cops.
Ooh.
I don't trust this. Squeals on Victor. Doesn't matter. He's already long gone to the States before the fuzz could catch him. Because he's like, I think he's on
to me.
Yeah. So he gets back to the States and he continues these con man ways with even more inventive means. 1916, he created his own church on the Manhattan waterfront.
What?
Yeah. This is like small mission. He said the service would, quote, swell all hearts with and souls with joy.
Well, eventually all scoundrels will find their way to the church.
He copied a Polish Catholic priest's speech.
Like word for word.
And then ad-libbed some bits.
Okay, nice.
But like it was the general thing.
He just free-versed a couple connections.
Yeah, the flock blown away.
Oh,
they're like, this is so moving.
Oratory genius.
So moving, I'm going to fork over collectively $90. That's like $2,500 today.
Okay.
In the offering.
And from a waterfront church, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and this wasn't a long con. This was just, he got the cash and disappeared.
So it's like 90 church, bucks. One service,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Then he set up a fake off-track betting shop.
Oh, that's smart.
And so he would pose as like this displaced European aristocrat, Count von Kessler.
Okay.
And then he'd trick a rich guy into going with him to like place bets. Oh, isn't this so fun?
Like the sting.
Yeah. Inside the fake betting shop, he had actors playing employees.
Yeah.
And it looked completely legit. And then, you know, Victor and the Fat Cat, they'd like listen to the broadcast of the race through the shop speakers, except it wasn't the race.
Totally.
One of his guys in the back room calling the fake race, and then they'd soak the guy and then move on.
This is exactly the sting.
Exactly
they
the
just
sting.
Ripped off Victor Lustig.
Exactly. It's inspiration.
Oh, there you go. That's
and
the word.
So let's take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, I'm going to share with you more antics of Victor Lustig.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts.
And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more. And that applies to criminals, too. I don't have to worry because SimpliSafe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. SimpliSafe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying SimpliSafe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Welcome.
Hey.
Victor.
Lustig. Mr. Lustig.
Mr. Lustig, if you're nasty.
Count if you're nasty.
Count Lustig. In his life, he actually had like scores of aliases.
I bet.
He used all these sorts of fake names.
Do you have any good ones?
No. His later. So his most ingenious scam was the Romanian box.
The Romanian box.
The Romanian box. It was a pretty good-sized wooden box.
And you're not pronouncing Romanian with a slow
it's
U.
It's R-U.
Okay, yeah, Romanian box. Interesting.
So there's this big box. Well, kind of like, I don't know. I've seen some of the things said that it was a small box. Some said it was the size of a steamer trunk.
Oh, that's a lot of questions.
He made more than one.
Okay, that's what I'm guessing.
So I think there was like whatever box was handy.
He's like, this is the box I got right now.
Yeah, so he would put like all these dials on the outside and had rollers inside.
Okay.
And he said that the box was able to duplicate cash using radium.
What?
I don't know.
Wait. Money could be duplicated using a radioactive material.
Yes.
Because we all know money is radioactive.
Well, at that time, it's like, you know, it's this new,
oh, it's a brand new thing. Yeah, and people are like x-raying your bones, which is like blows people's minds. Like, you can see through my hand.
Exactly.
So but how would that make money?
You know what? Just trust the box,
okay,
man. Trust
the box. Believe in the box.
So all you had to do was insert a bill into an entry slot.
Okay.
And then you had to wait 6 hours while it created a copy. The copy would come out this exit slot.
So this is like a Mission Impossible face mask machine, but
yes,
for money.
But
I just
for money.
Go in there, take a little picture, run it through.
Exactly.
Okay.
So he'd ask the mark for a $100 bill, and then he'd put it in the box with a blank piece of paper, like slide them both in, and the two of them would wait like this
six
allotted
hours
amount
together.
Of time. Yeah, while it did its magic, and then he would turn the dial, and the original bill would come out with another fresh $100.
Sure.
And then, you know, Victor heads to the bank with the mark and they show the teller this new bill and they get it authenticated.
Mm-hmm.
What was really happening is that Victor had stocked the box with like a few hundreds.
$100, yeah.
Yeah. And so he would sit with the guy while they ran the machine a couple times.
So how about them Yankees? Have
right.
You noticed?
Why and like inevitably, the guy wants to buy the box.
Of course.
Yeah.
A money printing box?
So he would,
and I'm a sucker?
Totally. So he'd like demur at first.
Like, it's like, no, oh, I couldn't
never.
Possibly.
And then
my mother gave me this box.
Yeah,
it's a family heirloom.
Exactly. Then he's like, well, all right. And he would name like this huge sum. When the mark agrees, he'd sell it to the guy and then be on his way. And like sometimes he sold the box for as much as 30 grand. That's like half a mil now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, how do these suckers get these this much money?
Meanwhile, the guy, like he'd get a couple more bills out of it and then it would run dry. And by that time,
it's Lustig's 24
gone.
Hours later.
And So one time he pulled this on a Texas sheriff.
Oh. Wow, he's got a pair on him to do that.
Yeah,
that guy will shoot you.
He made a few thousand off of him.
Really?
The sheriff tracked him down.
See?
And caught up with him in Chicago.
I was states away, they don't care.
Yeah, he confronts Victor.
Probably armed.
But Lustig was so smooth that he managed to turn the tables and convince the sheriff that he just wasn't using
it. He did
it
wrong. Yeah, oh, yeah, you're like, too dumb to use my box.
You're not paying attention. So he's like, you know what? I am so, so sorry. Let me give you a refund. I'm going to give you your money back.
Yeah, because you're so dumb.
And the sheriff is all pleased. He's like, thank you so much. And then he finds out later, we'll get to that, that the cash that he got was all counterfeit. So
yes.
Once he like worked the Romanian box as much as he could, he shifted focus.
I hope that cop got busted trying to pass counterfeit bills.
He did. And we'll get to that.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So 1925, the U.S. is in the grip of prohibition.
Okay.
Mobsters are making mad cash.
Oh, yeah. It's a good time for my people.
Who's the biggest mobster of all?
Mr. Alphonse Capone.
Al Capone. He was 26 years old, on the rise. Lustig arranged a meeting with Capone at the Hawthorne Hotel in Cicero, hometown to both Capone and Anthony Pelicano.
Yeah.
So Lustig had a proposal. All Capone had to do was invest
$50,000. Oh, my God.
That's like $870,000.
He's trying to rip off Capone for 50. Uh-huh. Okay, go on.
And he's like, look, I will double your money in 60 days or less. And like Capone, he's like, I like the cut of your jib, you know? You feel like an honest guy. Here's $50,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So Lustig, he sat on that money for 60 days.
Frank Nitti's in there shaking his head.
And then he took it back to Capone.
Yeah.
And he told him the plan had fallen apart. I can't make the investment.
Oh.
I'm returning your money
and I'm super honest, apologizing. Yes.
And Capone's impressed.
Yes. Nobody does
that. He's super honest. So then Lustig kind of lets it slip that the deal falling apart meant that he was ruined. He was totally broke. So Capone, so impressed. You're so honest. You've sacrificed yourself to shield me and protect my money. Here's $5,000.
Capone.
That's like $87,000 today.
That's crazy.
And so he risks his life conning Al Capone, but it was like the easiest $5,000 he ever made.
Totally. It's just all like he just milked him. He didn't really con him.
Totally. But he's so smooth. He can convince anyone anything.
And Capone thinks he's being so magnanimous. That's great.
Milked his ego. So December of 1928, Victor cozied up to a businessman, Thomas Kearns, in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And then Kearns, like, he invites Lustig over to his house to talk about a potential investment. While he's there, Victor does something totally out of character. He sneaks upstairs and he steals $16,000 from a desk drawer.
What?
Yeah, that's like $300,000 today.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine having that kind of money lying around?
I can.
I know. So it would be so,
I would like to
it would
continue
be amazing.
Imagining
I'm just
going to
keep
this.
Imagining it. So Kearns, of course, like he finds out, he calls the cops. Now, Lustig is officially on the police radar.
Yeah.
And that was a dumb move.
To make that
it was
move.
A dumb move. He'd always conned before.
I wonder if he was desperate.
He must have. But like, you know, you con, you can sneak off before anyone's aware.
Only people feel it's their idea or they're ashamed. Like the
well,
Texas...
that's the thing. Yeah. Most of the time, they're too embarrassed to admit the con. And so this was his first burglary. Big misstep. 1930. He drew on the inspiration of the Romanian box, and he went all in on counterfeiting.
Okay.
So he paired up with two Nebraska boys, a chemist named Tom Shaw and a pharmacist named William Watts. Now, in some accounts, they're listed as chemist and pharmacist. Others, he's like a pharmacy clerk. They're both like, Watts definitely has mafia ties.
Okay.
Like he's in with that. And I think he had done all sorts of chemical stuff for them. It helps in that kind of situation. So they get this whole operation together. Plates, paper, ink. And the ink that they had replicated the red and green threads in real
bills. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Watts and Shaw, they engraved the plates. Lustig put together a crew of couriers. They had no idea what they were carrying. They just knew they were carrying these packages. It was a huge venture. The distribution system put out over $100,000 a month into circulation.
Wow.
Yeah. Their work made it all over the United States.
Of course.
Millions of dollars in circulation. The cops started calling it Lustig money when they'd stumble onto it. It messed with the monetary system in the U.S.
Damn.
And it threatened to destabilize international confidence in the U.S. dollar. Yeah.
Like our Moody credit rating is going
totally,
down.
Totally, totally.
So they were aware it was Lustig then, if they're calling it Lustig money.
Yeah, yeah. Huh, later on. Well, you'll see.
Okay.
So they printed mostly $100 bills, but they had did other denominations.
Huh. Oftentimes it's 20s.
The hundreds are really risky because that draws a lot of...
Exactly.
Now, but even then, it's even more money.
Yeah, totally. Usually 20s and 5s are...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... The cash was so well made that even the hundreds, the bank tellers couldn't tell that they were holding bad bills. A judge said that Lustig and his crew were, quote, like some other government issuing money in rivalry with the United States Treasury. So they're just like overdoing it. In 1938, William H. Moran, head of the Secret Service, he established a task force. So they gathered in his office. Spread out on his desk were all of these $20 bills, and they all had the imprint of the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland, Ohio. So all of these agents are studying the bills. They have magnifying glasses, all these like special lights. They can't believe it. The $20 bills on the desk are counterfeit, done so cleverly that they could only detect them with the lights and the magnifying glasses. Each bill had been in circulation for a while.
Okay.
And had passed in and out of banks like that. So the Secret Service agents, they start tracking these bills. The heaviest traffic was in Chicago. And that led them to believe that the mob was involved.
Okay.
So government investigators, they checked all the engravers employed by the Mint. And then they looked into the activities of other engravers outside the Mint who, like, might be capable of turning out, like, a perfect bill. So all of these guys, all these engravers, they get a clean bill of health.
Wow.
They're, you know, they're not involved. Meanwhile, new $5, $10, and $100 counterfeits are appearing. And each series on a different Federal Reserve Bank. So they're switching Yeah. So the first hint that Lustig might be involved came when that Texas sheriff he fooled with the Romanian box paid off with fake cash. He gets picked up in New Orleans for passing bad cash.
No, man.
And like the sheriff is arguing and they're like,
he turned a million shades of red. You know it.
He gives them a full like description of Lustig.
Oh, yeah.
He still had to do a little time.
What?
Yeah, he got like busted for it.
Oh yeah, no, I expressed this to a Bank of America when they gave me counterfeit bills when I went to the Bank of America and I went trying to use one. I went right back and I said, "You guys gave these to me."
Yeah.
They're like, I'm like, I can be arrested for what you did.
Yeah.
They're like, "Sir, they wouldn't even give me my money back." They're just like, "Sir, get out of the bank."
No, we had a fundraiser thing when I was teaching. Like the faculty all had to like kick in for some Christmas thing. And I was in charge of it, and I was going through the bills, and a 10 was, like, a lot smaller than the rest. And it was totally, someone gave me counterfeit cash, a faculty member. So I, like, didn't know what to do, so I called, like, the local cops, and they sent out these detectives, and they took it.
Oh, nice.
And, like, I was out 10
bucks. I like that you called the cops.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get
No, I know, special investigators. You guys got to work together.
Yeah, exactly. Solidarity. So the sheriff does time.
Yes.
The problem that, like, with finding Lustig is that he was a master of disguise.
Oh, really?
He had all these costumes, right? Sometimes he dressed like a priest.
I'm telling you, that's a rabbi. Winning move. Winning
move.
He was,
you know, not... Yeah. He was,
people don't question a man of the cloth.
Exactly. He would dress as a bellhop. And the reason that was helpful, because then, like, he could just pretend to carry luggage out for a guest, and he's actually making a run for
Totally.
It. Yeah. So the feds, they...
Construction and house paint are also good because people never ask or wonder why you're there.
Yeah, you put on one of those orange vests, you're good to go. So the feds, they start trailing this man who had passed some of the fake bills. They go to his house and they found out that he had like, back in Prohibition, he'd been printing fake whiskey labels for bootleggers.
Oh.
And so then they search his place and they find the press that the money had been printed on.
Okay.
And they found $300,000 in fake bills. If you're wondering, Zarin,
yes,
that's
I was wondering.
$6.5 million today in
fake
bills.
Oh, man.
Small denominations.
So, I'll take it.
Right? So the printer told him that, like, I don't have the plates. I just have this machine. I have to return the plates after each printing. He said that he never met Lustig, and it was some other dude who brought him the supplies, the ink, paper plates. And so things went south for Lustig, not because of good detective work on the part of the Secret Service. Nope, Zarin. It was lust and a woman who closed the net on them.
Oh.
Yeah. So Lustig, he's having an affair.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. He's having an affair with Tom Shaw's mistress.
What?
His partner's
his
mistress.
His chemist mistress? His chemist buddy's mistress?
Yeah. She's also considerably younger.
Oh.
The mistress. It wasn't Tom who got upset. It was Lustig's girlfriend, Billy May.
They got a lot of parties involved in this.
Oh, yeah. She lost it. She finds out that
Billy
he's
May,
cheating.
She's going to lose it. Billy a woman May named Billy May.
Uh-huh. So she makes an anonymous call to the feds. Feds, it's Billy May. Get him. She tells them everything.
Oh, nice.
Where, and she, you know, she's like, and the coup de grace, I can tell you where he is in New York right now.
Right this minute.
Yeah. So the feds, they have intel that Lustig had taken up with another gal. Totally unrelated.
Not Shaw's girl.
No.
A third.
Yeah, she's holed up in a hotel in New York. So the agents, they sit on the hotel until they saw Lustig and his lady friend coming and going. And then they tap the phone. And they heard him make an appointment to pick up a suitcase at Broadway and 47th Street.
All right.
Zarin.
Yes.
Close your eyes.
Oh,
I want you to picture it.
All right.
It's a lovely Sunday evening, May 10th, 1935. You are Secret Service agent Peter A. Rubano.
Call me Pete.
You made a name for yourself busting mafioso Ignazio the Wolf Lupo.
Ooh.
Yeah. You're a big Italian-American and you take no guff.
Yeah.
So you've been tailing Victor Lustig for months. You and your team are following Lustig as he strolls down Broadway in the Upper West Side. He's a stylish and well-composed man, and you notice that he has a new mustache and long sideburns. You can spot him a mile away, still, even with all that. You've been studying his photograph, his mannerisms, all the little details that make a person who they are. And in this case, it's a crook. Besides, there's no hiding that big scar down the side of his face.
That's right.
So as cars whiz by, you signal to one of your agents down the road. He watches as Lustig strolls past, heading your way. Lustig wears a posh, double-breasted, dark overcoat with a velvet collar, cutting a fine figure, as always. You stand at a bus stop reading a newspaper. Just as Lustig approaches, you throw down the paper and grab him by that velvet collar. Hands in the air, you yell, as all your fellow agents surround you and the infamous con man. A car honks its horn at the gathered crowd of lawmen. People on Sunday evening strolls scoot around you. You slap handcuffs on Lustig, and another agent grabs a suitcase he was carrying. Victorious, you shove him in the back of a squad car and head for the federal building. You've finally captured your white whale.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll find out how the criminal justice system treated Victor Lustig and vice versa.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Victor Lustig, Lustig.
I am
Vicky.
Ishmael. Found my white whale.
Con man extraordinaire.
Yeah.
So he impressed the agents who interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
Victor stayed calm, confident the whole time. One of the agents said, "Count, you're the smoothest con man that ever lived." Hmm. And Lustig's reply, "I wouldn't say that. After all, you've conned me." Oh.
Hey.
So with great flourish, an agent brings the suitcase into the interrogation room to open it.
Mm-hmm.
He's hoping for stacks and stacks of fake cash and, like, maybe the printing plates themselves.
Oh, okay.
Nope. They open it up, and all that's in there is like a good portion of his immaculate wardrobe, like all this expensive clothing.
All this like silk shirts and everything.
So Victor, though, he's like, you know what? I will tell you all about Tom Shaw and William Watts. Anything you want to know. He sings like a bird all about their plan. But he's like, I had nothing to do with it. I just heard about it.
I don't even know those dudes.
Yeah. So an agent goes through his Chesterfield coat and he finds a wallet and a key. And he wouldn't tell them where the key came from, but they, you know, searched it out and it went to a locker in Times Square subway station. So he's like, I have no idea. I have no idea where that key came from. So the agents, they go to the locker, they open it up, and they found the counterfeit cash and the printing plates that they thought would be in the luggage. $51,000 in cash. That's like $1.1 million today.
All right.
So they have him dead to rights. They want answers. They also wanted to know if he was involved in the shooting of Legs Diamond.
Whoa!
Yeah, because Legs Diamond was staying just down the hall from him in a hotel the night he was shot.
Okay.
But he didn't have anything to do with
that.
That
doesn't sound like he would move out of his crime oeuvre twice.
Right, but he had all these weird tentacle connections to the mob at the time.
Sure, but becoming a hitman for them is that's quite a step, a stretch.
So he gets charged with possession of the fake cash and the plates. And his trial was scheduled for September 2nd, 1935.
All right.
Now, they ship him off to the federal detention headquarters in New York. And he's bragging, like, you know what? No prison can hold me. And this place was supposed to be inescapable. But if I'm telling you that, you can probably guess that it was escapable, right? So the day before his trial, the Sunday before Labor Day, September 1st, 1935, he escaped. He cut the bars in his cell. And he made a rope out of bed sheets.
The classic. Like, if you're trying to say that your prison is, like, inescapable, you should be able to stop somebody from cutting the bars and leaving
and
with the bed sheets.
And making a rope out of bed sheets.
That's the first move.
So, like, out he goes, like, swinging on the rope. Writer Jeff Maish said in Smithsonian Magazine, quote, like an urban Tarzan. So he's going down the building.
Greystoke is the way down.
But people are walking down the street. So he pulls a handkerchief out of his pocket and pretends to be washing the windows.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And like passersby stop.
Because, you know, window washers use sheets.
Totally. So then he slides all the way down the rope. He like lands outside the prison walls. He takes a bow for the people who are watching. And then he runs his little legs down the road. Scurry, scurry. So when the guards get to his cell, they found a note that he'd written. He quoted Victor Hugo's Les Misérables.
Get out.
Yeah. Quote, he allowed himself to be led in a promise. Jean Valjean had his promise, even to a convict, especially to a convict. It may give the convict confidence and guide him on the right path. Law was not made by God, and man can be wrong.
Wow. And on the other side, it was written in French.
Right, probably. So now we've got Count Victor Lustig out on the loose, a master of disguise and a smooth talker on the run from the law. Lustig, he stayed away from the fuzz. But they eventually caught up with him. On the night of Saturday, September 28th, 1935, they busted him in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah. The FBI and Secret Service, they got a tip that he was there. So they spotted Lustig jump into a car that had been waiting for him, and then two agents give chase. Chase only lasted 9 blocks. But they were going super fast. Like,
for that
like,
9 blocks.
Yeah, and they're like neck and neck, like right next to each other. And so the feds ram their car into Lustig's, and then the car's locked wheels.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then they have this huge crash.
Of course.
And the feds like jump out of their car, guns drawn. Lustig steps out of his car and says, well, boys, here I am. So
he's like,
smooth.
Yeah, he doesn't have a gun. You know, he's not going to fight.
Exactly.
His way out.
Exactly.
And he can't run because he's just in a car accident.
Right? So he's all like his pupils are tiny. Yeah. So he gets sent back to New York and goes before a judge in November of 1935. And by this time, he's like a little worse for wear.
That sounds like
Yeah, he's looking bad. He pleads guilty and got sentenced to 20 years.
Oof.
Five of those were for his escape. From the, you know, the jail.
Inescapable prison.
Yeah. Yeah. And then 15 years for counterfeiting. He's only 46. He looks far older in the pictures.
Oh, really?
So the courtroom was standing room only as he, like, calmly took his sentence.
Nice.
He was seeking leniency, though. So his lawyer pointed out that he had generally victimized other criminals like, quote, Chicago gangsters, Arnold Rothstein, and other underworld leaders in New York and Boston.
He also conned Arnold
Apparently,
Rothstein, the brain.
I couldn't find anything else about the Rothstein stuff. Oh, going through all the newspapers.
I'm sure he didn't make the papers. Like, he had to tell his lawyer.
Exactly. Like, so he's like, P.S., I got him.
I also got Dutch Schultz. I got
Exactly. So Watts was also sentenced that day. Both he and Lustig got $1,000 fines. Watts got 10 years at a prison in Pennsylvania. Where did they send Lustig?
Leavenworth.
Alcatraz.
Oh, wow.
The Rock.
Oh, nice. I forgot. It's the 30s. Of course, the Alcatraz.
Exactly. So, Alcatraz, just as an aside, I'm working on a beaut of an episode about escapes from Alcatraz. So, stay tuned.
Ooh.
Yeah. It'll be a while, but it'll be worth it. So, Lustig, he goes to Alcatraz. Al Capone had been sent there a year before.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that he played the banjo.
Yes, and the band, the Alcatraz, I guess, like, at the rock band or whatever.
Yeah, totally. And they had, like, a standing
gig, like, every Tuesday or whatever.
So Lustig gets there, and he's searched in a most thorough manner, as they do. And when they're done, they hosed him down with ice-cold seawater.
As
was the custom of the day.
Oh, man, right? That's got to be rough.
So now he is prisoner number 300.
Oh, 300? Yeah. The numbers are so low.
I know. So they paraded him naked as a jaybird down Broadway. That's the term for that main corridor.
Yeah, huh?
And the other inmates are like hooting and howling at him, and they're clanking their metal cups on the bars.
Fresh fish.
Totally. Quote, he is somewhat superficially humiliated. He asserts that he was accused of everything in the category of crime, including the burning of Chicago. That was in his prison record.
The burning of Chicago?
Like, he's like
the cow kicked over.
Mrs. Leary. He's like, they're trying to get me on everything, even the burning of Chicago. And apparently he just is like complaining about this all the time.
just going around once again with the burning of
what
Chicago.
What else are they going to charge me
with? Do I look like Mrs. Leary's cow?
So they referred to him as Miller in all the paperwork. That was one of his aliases.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He didn't do too well in the punishing climate at Alcatraz.
Ooh.
It's cold.
Oh, it was brutal.
It is cold out there. So by December 7th, 1946, 11 years into his 20-year sentence, Lustig had made more than 1,000 medical requests and filled more than 500 prescriptions.
1,000?
1,000.
Wow.
Just as an aside, he was there for the entirety of World War II.
Oh.
Could you, like, the news coming in, it must have been wild.
Must have been insane. And you hear the sirens and you see, like, maybe, like, the lights going across, sweeping the sky.
Well, and, like, to be in the middle of the San Francisco Bay, you're seeing all the planes.
The planes go over. You're hearing planes all the time.
So the prison guards, they all thought he was faking it, the sickness.
Of course.
A malingerer.
Oh.
And they knew he'd escaped before, so they thought this was just another ruse. But there's, like, 100 doctor visits a year.
It's
a lot.
I don't even know how you'd be able to pull off, like, oh, I got a new thing. I mean, like,
right. And so,
wouldn't you get bored at number 78, 79?
So according to medical reports, he was, quote, inclined to magnify physical complaints and constantly complaining of real and imaginary ills.
Like, he's kind of a hypochondriac.
Yeah. But here's the thing. On the 9th of March, 1947, he came down with pneumonia.
Okay.
And he got shipped out to the Medical Center for Federal Prisoners in Springfield, Missouri.
Why? They shipped him so far.
Well, doctors took one look at him and they realized he was not faking it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just pneumonia. He had an aggressive brain tumor.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So 2 days after he arrived, he died. And his death certificate lists his occupation as apprentice salesman. So,
dance instructor.
A few months after he died, his name was in the papers, but not as a death notice.
Hmm.
Other counterfeiters had been nabbed. And it was the biggest bust since Lustig.
Okay.
So that ring was rounded up on a tip from a farmer who distrusted, quote, city slickers.
Yes.
The counterfeiters, they printed $600,000 in bogus money, and agents followed the trail of the bills from Detroit to Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And so they arrested a bunch of guys. Joe Mosciano, alias Joe Moosh.
Okay.
Peter Klikas.
Mm-hmm.
Minas Constantine Aretos.
Hmm.
Vito D'Agostino.
Okay.
John Brennan and George Kanakis.
A lot of Greeks.
Kanakis. Italians, Greeks, Irish working together in harmony.
Finally.
Yeah. So the tip from the farmer came after Kanakis bought a turkey from this DePlain, Illinois farmer a few days before Thanksgiving. So the farmer said that he, quote, didn't even watch me when I weighed the bird. I figured there must be something wrong with anybody that trusting. So
he's spending someone else's money.
Yeah,
I don't trust him.
I don't trust this. So he got the license number from the car and he took the $20 bill that Kanakis gave him to the bank. And the cashier was like, that is counterfeit. That is some fake money. So the farmer calls the Secret Service.
Oh, wow.
And then the agents get that license number from him and they trace the car to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
They arrested him right before Thanksgiving with $200 in bogus $20 bills in his pocket. And he admitted to passing between $2,000 and $3,000.
Okay.
Aristos, He ran a coffee shop, and he printed counterfeit $10 bills in a vacant store next door. He was picked up while delivering $2,000 worth of fake cash to a, quote, passer.
All right.
And then another $30,000 was found hidden in his house. And Brennan, he got arrested next. He admitted that he was the one who made the plates at their hideout on D'Agostino's farm near Schneider, Indiana.
Okay.
So the Secret Service went there, and they recovered the press, the printer's ink, bond paper, all the accessories. Mm-hmm. Agents said that Brennan admitted that the ring printed $30,000 in $5 bills, $200,000 in 20s,
wow.
and $400,000 in 10s.
Damn.
Yeah. Brennan's just singing on everything. He's like, I'll tell you whatever you need to know.
He's like, play a tune. I got a song.
Yeah, Klikas, he gets seized next. So agents found $30,000 in counterfeits hidden near the skylight of an upstairs bedroom.
Okay.
And D'Agostino, when he was arrested, the agent said that he admitted to printing the fake 20s in his basement. He's
right.
like, fine. Yeah. So Retos, Brennan, Klikas, D'Agostino.
Kanakis.
Yeah, they're arraigned and they plead innocent. The arraignment was kept secret because they were waiting to arrest Joe Moosh.
Oh, okay.
And so then they pick him up. He pleads innocent.
Got to get the Moosh.
Yeah, exactly. The sale price, the Secret Service said, was you could pay $18 for $100 in bogus fives, $30 for $100 in counterfeit 10s and 20s. So apparently the larger denominations were not such bad fakes, but the fivers were bad.
Yeah.
They were really hard to pass. And the authorities all said that this was this huge score, but in the papers they're like, this is huge, but he's no Victor Lustig. Like they just keep, and they think that he's all still stewing
alive
in Alcatraz
yeah. mm-hmm.
because news of his death didn't become public for 2 years.
Why?
Well, it wasn't until his brother got pinched on counterfeit charges in New Jersey.
Oh, he brought his brother into the family business?
And so he goes to court for it, and he tells the judge, you know, my brother passed away, and gives the date. At the time of his death, Lustig money was still in circulation.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So what's your ridiculous takeaway?
I got to get into counterfeiting.
Yeah, you do.
It just sounds like fun.
Yeah.
It just seems like you meet interesting people, you have fun adventures.
Yeah. That's not bad, $18 for 100 in bogus fives.
Yeah, I was
but
wondering
the fives
what the,
are really bad. So
I was wondering what the takeaway
I'd pay
was.
$30 for 100 in counterfeit.
Would you?
No.
No, you would not.
No.
What's your ridiculous takeaway, Elizabeth?
Don't have one.
See what I just did?
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, anyway.
Hold on.
Wait, what?
I think I feel some talkbacks coming on.
Ooh, is that what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Talkbacks. Oh, my God. Did he just say that?
Hi, Elizabeth and Zarin. My name is Brandon. I was just listening to the show about riots, and it was thrilling to me because I also was at that Body Count and Metallica and Guns N' Roses show. I participated in the throwing of dirt. I also was struck by dirt, and I had dirt put down my pants. It was everything a 14-year-old could have asked for, and my next concert was Cannibal Corpse, so whatever. Hey guys, this is Brandon. I just sent a message about the rioting thing, and I just wanted to say thank you for your show. I work out here in Pleasanton at the garbage company, and I put tires on the garbage trucks, and it's a miserable, stinky job. And you guys, in between all the wrestling podcasts, are a bright spot in my otherwise smelly day. Thanks.
Yes! So good. That's us for today. You can find us online at RidiculousCrime.com. We're also at RidiculousCrime on both Twitter and Instagram. Email RidiculousCrime@gmail.com. Leave us a talkback on the iHeart app. Reach out, baby. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Count Dave Kustin, Master of Disguise, Disguise. Research is by Marissa, $20 gets you 100, Brown, and Romanian box manufacturer Andrea Song Charpentier. The theme song is by plate engraver Thomas Lee and ink mixer Travis Dutton. Host wardrobe is provided by Botany 500. Executive producers are Ben Secret Bolin and Noel Service Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.